Hello and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic, the First Pioneers podcast. It's a podcast all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm Kevin Finkel, your host, joined here by my co-host and a special guest. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
I was going to say, hello, everybody. It's Ryan. You know me. I'm the cardboard samurai out of Japan, and our guest today is...
Hadi13. How's it going, everyone? I'm your go-to grinder for Pioneer.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, welcome back. Yeah, it's been a little bit. We've had some other great guests on, but we're glad to have you back on the show. Always appreciate the insights you can add. And yeah, we do really see you as a very competitive side of things. You know, me and Ryan can only go so far. We watch, we talk a lot of Pioneer, but it's best to go to the pros, go to the people who are doing this, you know, really keeping up to date with what's going to win. And that's why we've got you on the show. So, you know, we've got a good topic for today, but just, you know, we haven't had you on there. How do you feel about this little, you know, post-ban new set? What are you feeling about Pioneer right now?
So you're all well aware, I took a little break from Pioneer, just before the bans. I was getting kind of tired of, although the format was diverse as always, Pioneer is one of these mysterious formats that seems to ride with the waves of broken cards that Wizards throw at us quite often right now. But I was getting kind of lethargic, as I felt like a lot of the play patterns in Pioneer were quite scripted because of certain cards warping the format in a sense. The big one for me, the two main ones were obviously Teferi Time Raveler and Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. I think some people were querying why, like, oh, Wilderness Reclamation, why does that matter when Uro's banned? Or why does Teferi matter? It didn't have massive impact in the format. Like, whether that's true or not, those cards are just stupid. Like, they shouldn't have been printed. And Teferi just allowed, like, decks like Omnath, Greed to really just dominate because... The games where Teferi Time Raveler stuck and when it didn't were just massive in terms of the chances of winning and losing. So for me, as a, you know, I'm a blue mage at heart, seeing Teferi Time Raveler go was massive for me. And I did like casting Uro. I think I cast black, blue, green cards in every format at one point, but I knew fine well the card was too good and deservedly got banned. I think I mentioned it on the podcast after the previous bans, that I felt like the Uro ban was going to come on the horizon. If you don't believe me, go back some podcasts, maybe September, October time. I definitely said it live. And yeah, we're here now. It's banned. Post-ban format has turned out even better than what I expected. I've seen a few people moaning that, like, oh, they felt like the bans would have killed Niv-Mizzet. Well, Niv-Mizzet's still dominating in the format. It's still going strong. There's a lot of really nice decks. Black-Red Pyromancer's coming back, as well as various other decks that we'll discuss during the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I haven't even seen Omnath still here and there. We've seen Niv-Mizzet still. So those decks managed to live on. Definitely makes me think, glad we banned Wilderness Reclamation, because I bet that would have been fine without Uro, considering how much everything else was.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask real quick, so Wizards kind of explained, they said that, like you said, like Teferi and Uro, maybe they weren't unbeatable, but they made the format unfun, and Wizards kind of had a statement that they made during the last ban announcement that said they're trying to build a format that is fun and enjoyable to play. So would you support that going forward, if we have some cards that kind of make the format unfun, should they go?
Yes, I agree. I think, like, Pioneer's always been one of these formats ever since it came out that it's almost like it has a point to prove. I feel like a lot of people who normally play Modern and such formats always seem to have an opinion on Pioneer without really... Mm-hmm. getting involved much, without even playing. Like, people are quickly to give their opinions on the format, and I think that, you know, giving anyone more reason to, you know, take a negative shine towards the format isn't good. I think the format really needs to to be as fun as it possibly can to invite new players coming along. And, you know, I'm really glad they banned Oops All Spells as well. I think that deck was just ridiculous. Like, a one-card combo, it's just ridiculous. Like, the deck, it's the same as the Companions almost, where it was like, oh, there's deck restrictions that ended up just not really being big enough a restriction to for how powerful the deck was. So, yeah, I think, I agree. I mean, as much as I really want Inverted or Truce back, I understand that, you know, people see... yeah, like, two-card combo that actually functions fine with... like, around a deck that functions fine without the combo is probably just too good for Pioneer.
Yeah. Maybe when Thassa's Oracle's gone.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think we said before, like, I think Inverter could come back if they banned, like, another card, like... Dig Through Time, or like, say, like, not just Dig Through Time, but like Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, or Thassa's Oracle, or Jace, maybe not Jace Wielder. I don't know. I think they would have to ban two cards, so they'd have to ban like both the Delve draw spells and Thassa's Oracle. I think if they just
down for that, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I think if they just banned one card, it probably still would be. It would find its way to be like the most one of the most powerful decks in the format. I don't know. I think it's easier for them to just ban Inverter and go, you know what, we don't have to deal with this problem 4 months down the line. Like, we just accept that this card's not really relevant anywhere else, so we'll just ban it and that's fine.
So you have
sorry,
I was gonna say you've been playing more than recently, right?
Yep.
And what are you on these days? So how have you made your transition to Uroless and Reclamation list decks?
Well, given the fact that I love blue black spells and I love combos in this format, I have I took a shine. So basically, Canister four-rowed a prelim last week with blue black Valkyrie combo. Have you guys seen the deck?
Oh yeah, yeah. So why don't I cut in here and say, like, so let's go to the reason that we're having the topic today, you know, introduce the topic, is that what we wanted to talk about today is some of those less mainstay decks. You know, now that these bans have happened, we're seeing some new changes up. We're seeing, you know, if you guys are watching or playing any Pioneer, you're probably seeing a lot of very interesting decks out there, maybe some things you don't expect, or maybe you're a player who hasn't been playing much and you're either interested or worried about what you're going to see. We wanted to do this episode and talk about some of those kind of rogue decks, those, you know, tier two, or, you know, even powerful things that are just showing up that are popular right now, and you may see if you go into a league here. So we're, you know, I think it's a perfect lead into, you were talking about one of the decks that I definitely have been seeing and I would love to talk about. So blue black, or I have seen this in Grixis. You know, people have been comparing it to Inverter combo, but maybe do you want to give a little more about the deck? You're sounding like you had some backstory.
Yeah, so basically I watched Canister 4-0 a prelim with this deck, and one of the most noticeable things about it was absolutely farming any of the greedy, like, Yorion decks, and I was like, this is just what I signed up for when I played Pioneer. It's basically utilizing, most of the cards will be familiar, it utilizes the best cards in blue and black, Dig Through Time and really efficient discard and removal spells like Fatal Push and Thoughtseize just marry up so well. But basically what the deck does, he was initially playing Lurrus. I think he realized by the end of the prelim that you don't really need a companion. Like, Lurrus just thwarts your sideboard plans too much. So basically, it took the Lurrus out and was playing cards like Torrential Gearhulk, Kalatas. Kalatas is really nice right now, even in the main. Basically what happens is there's a card called Release to the Wind, and you... basically what it does is 3 mana, and it's you may exile, instant speed, you may exile target non-land permanent. Its owner may cast the spell without paying its mana cost. So what you do is you play Valkyrie, God of Lies, turn 2, and then you can potentially have a turn 3 Tybalt, because you can exile your Valkyrie and cast the Tybalt side of it without paying its mana cost. So although it's not when it doesn't always win you the match, but if you manage to do it turn 3, it normally gets you far enough ahead that you've pretty much won the game at that point. Yeah.
So that's where the Inverter combo comparison has come through, in that it's sort of a 2-card combo for cheap that in a way can win you the game, and then the rest of the deck is just a nice blue-black control deck.
Yeah, pretty much. Basically, Valky, the good thing is about the deck is Valky on its own is quite good. If you ever, I've played against Rakdos Arcanist a few times and I've managed to like Valky their Kroxa from their hand. And then occasionally your Valky doesn't get fatal pushed. So turn three, you can just pay two and Valky becomes a Kroxa. And that's so basically nasty. A combo as well. Yeah, it's scary if your opponent can't deal with it straight away. And also you're playing cards like Jace Friend's Prodigy, which I always love, but Jace needs to be in the right shell. Like Jace needs to basically be in a shell where it can, where it has potential to go off turn three and you have like really good cards to bring back with Jace, like Thoughtseize in the early game, Thoughtseize or Fatal Push, or, you know, in the late game, Dig Through Time. So I really like being able to cast Jace Friend's Prodigy again. The deck's definitely not as powerful as Inverter. Like, Release to the Wind is, it's not the best card. Like, it forces you to play some alternative cards that benefit from it. So, like, that's why I'm playing, like, one Torrential Gearhulk, because you can flash Torrential Gearhulk in and you get its effect again. But the card on its own is relatively weak, but not as bad as people would maybe first assume. So
yeah, so you know, you can respond to removal by bouncing your creature, and then that gives you value. Do you ever get good chances to use it on opponents' permanents?
Yeah, the main number one, the main one is Shark Typhoon. Like, Shark Typhoon's quite nice. Like, if your opponent in a control matchup, your opponent just makes a big shark, you can just Release to the Wind it and get rid of it, which is like a 3-mana removal spell. It's not amazing, but it's no longer a dead card at that point. I've been having great results against any control deck, any Yorion deck with it. The aggro matchups are actually reasonably close. I got a 5-0 today, and I got paired against Winota twice, and I managed to beat them both times. Valky as a 2-drop does work. Even against burn, like, some people think, oh, it's not going to be good, but it forces them to use one of their burn spells on it or trades with a creature. So, yeah, I've been impressed with the deck. The only issue that you might find playing this deck right now is a lot of people are maxing out on Graveyard Hate. Like, Leyline of the Void's getting played in a lot of black decks, so you need to bear that in mind. When you're sideboarding, you need to consider, you know, I'm playing two Drown the Locks, should I board them out, or do I need to play all four Dig Through Times? Stuff like that. There's the meta's definitely changed quite a bit since.
So I do want to touch on Valky, because I think you brought up a really good point there that I don't think people have discussed enough, and that's what we love to do, is discuss things about Pioneer that people aren't discussing. When Valky came out, I felt like we were kind of down on the front side of Valky, because there were a lot of matchups where he wasn't very good. You know, Niv, he wasn't great. In the Sultai Reclamation decks, even the Team Reclamation decks, he really didn't have any targets. So as a front side card, he was not very good then. I feel like now, you know, Lurrus decks, it's great when they play Lurrus and you can steal it and bring something back. You know, turning into opponent's Lurrus is just gravy. A lot of the, you know, the Citadel decks, like the Jund Sacrifice decks, they often don't have a good way to get rid of him, so he just pulls a good creature out of their hand. So a lot of good value off of that card, which wasn't as good as a front side, I feel like, before now.
Yeah, the front side's definitely got better, in my opinion. Like, so you made a good point about Lurrus, right? But even one of the key things that Valky can do sometimes, especially when you're playing against burn and you've got to the point in the game where you've managed to stabilize, they've ran out of cards, they've got to the point where they're top decking, that's normally when they bring Lurrus to hand. So say you're on like 5 life or something, you know, you're like, well, I need to stabilize somehow. They've put Lurrus to hand, and then the great thing is you can just take the Lurrus, and then it's a 3-2 lifelinker. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the issue normally with these decks against burn, is you normally just lose to a top deck Boros Charm or lose to a top deck burn spell, basically the classic.
Yep, and you already know they're out of gas.
Yeah,
so
yeah, but by being able to like steal the Lurrus from their hand with Valky, because you're normally having to board out your Thoughtseizes, right? Because it's just bad. That's where they normally get you. Like, the Lurrus is normally safe in hand, and it normally has instant impact. But the fact that you can keep in a hand disruption spell and steal it from their hand, and, you know, you have lifelink all of a sudden, and, you know, if they don't have Roiling Vortex, it's really good for you. So, yeah, I've been impressed with Valky a lot. And just stuff like the ceiling on it is really high, because like I said before, like sometimes you just get to steal a Kroxa and start dealing 6 damage on turn 3 with it, or you get to, you know, disrupt your opponent. Like that's why I probably won the Winota matchups, because I got to steal a clutch creature from their hand, and they don't really play burn spells, so stuff like that, just those kind of situations just worked out really well for me with the card, which I didn't expect. I basically didn't expect it to be as good as it was, like the front side. So yeah, I've been impressed by Valky since the bannings.
All right, so that is going to kind of wrap up this deck, unless you had something to jump in there with, Ryan.
No, but I wanted to say, you're talking a lot about Winota, and I think we've seen a lot of Winota recently in this new metagame, and I'm just wondering, why has it become so much more popular slash better?
Basically, like, the mana base got better, right? The mana base is probably one of the main reasons. And I think...
So I'm going to be doing this a few times, I think, in this episode, is I'm just going to shout out Trend Alert. Mana bases with lots of pathways have become popular. We've been seeing, you know, 3-color mana bases that are running a full 12 pathways sometimes, and I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, I agree. And pathways have been great, because it gives me access in this deck to play basically like blue black, and then I need a red land mid to late game, because I've just drawn Tibble off the, do you know what I mean? So I can choose to play like the red side of one of the blue lands, and it doesn't really affect my mana that much. So yeah, I like the pathways a lot, and it's given decks like Spirits and Winota more consistency, which is great for them, those strategies, you know. So yeah, I think pathways have been, I really like the card design of pathways. I think it's really cool.
So Gen to Sacrifice is another one that has gotten a lot better, I think, because of the better mana base.
Agreed. Yeah, John's...
Yeah, I've seen them on, like, just Pathways and Shocks, and that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I was saying we did spend quite a bit of time on that deck. You know, we wanted to cover just a bunch of different, you know, touch on a bunch of rogue decks, so probably we won't go quite as deep on each of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think Harry 13 and I were back and forth on that one. If, Ryan, you want to kick us off with a deck that you're interested in as a rogue deck?
Okay, so I think I talked before about how I was building... like a dwarves deck, a red-white dwarves deck, and the dwarves deck really didn't appear because we're kind of lacking good dwarves, but I know Connor Man and a couple of other people have been trying out red-white vehicles, so I think that's kind of a good, it's a good strategy.
To take your deck? Yeah.
I mean, it's a good strategy. It's a decent strategy. It's still kind of a glass cannon. And before they were on, like, a Hammer Time, which is also kind of a rogue deck, you could say. So basically, how this deck works, it's a red-white deck. You have Giant Ox, which is the 0/6 that can crew with its defense. You have Magda. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have SRAM or some other, card draw engine, you know. This was a creature that lets you draw a card whenever you play a vehicle, so that's giving you a card advantage that way. You have Toolcraft Exemplar, Veteran Motorist. It's a Lurrus deck, so, I mean, pretty much most aggro decks, if they're not playing Lurrus, they're doing something wrong, I think.
Well, so I'm going to jump in with another Trend Alert that I wanted to give. Yeah. So Trend Alert... this is a deck, you know, it does play vehicles that are 3 or more mana, and it, you know, it also always wants to have an Ember Cleave alongside their Magda. So this is not usually a Lurrus
companion
deck.
Yeah.
This is a Lurrus main deck, which I've been seeing a few of. So that was the Trend Alert I wanted to point out, is that Lurrus is gaining in popularity not only as a sideboard card, but as a main board card. I feel like there's a couple decks we'll point out where he's seeing some play in the main deck. Yeah. And I think that's something to really know, because he, you know, he is a powerful enough card draw engine for a lot of these lists, you know, just a good black-white card advantage card.
Yeah, so like you were saying, like, there are a lot of three mana plus cards, but the main force of this deck is like the 7/11 Consulate Dreadnought for 1 mana that has Crew 6, or the Colossal Plow.
Yes, is that, yeah, Colossal Plow, which is the new one, if you guys have seen Unlimited, is just awesome. You know, gain 3 and draw a card. It's practically Uro, and it swings for 6.
Yeah. And this also plays Peacewalker Colossus, which lets you pay 2 mana just to turn something into a creature, so you don't have to worry about actually crewing it.
Mm-hmm. And then often Heart of Kieran as well. So yeah, great vehicles deck. And I think that what makes it so good competitively is that it does get to prey on a lot of these slower decks. You know, things like Yorion decks, things like the Green Walkers deck can really fall behind and don't have a lot of good ways to interact with vehicles which aren't creatures not on their turn. So things like Sweepers mm-hmm. can be very ineffective. They've got a lot of big butts, you know, an Ox crewing things. That can be hard for a lot of things to deal 6 damage to.
The one problem I've seen with this deck is that, you know, against those really heavy control decks with a lot of removal, they've come to situations where they just can't crew anything. So I think it hasn't reached its final form yet. You know, it's not Frieza level 5 or whatever. You know, he is a Dragon Ball analogy there. But I think, you know, give it another like month or so, I think we'll see a very fine-tuned, you know, vehicles deck. So that's the deck that I wanted to talk about. I'm amazed that it's doing as well as it is. You know, it seems like... It takes a lot of, you know, decisions on far as like, you know, what kind of hand you need to keep. Because if you don't have enough creatures.
Yeah, Magda makes a lot of decisions when you're creating mana by tapping creatures and crewing things.
Yeah. So it seems like for me it might be a little bit harder to run. But I think it's an interesting rogue deck. It's an up and comer.
I like, I'm a big fan of Giant Ox crew, that limited all-star. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I didn't even read Giant Ox, to be honest. I remember like someone played Colossal Plough when they had Giant Ox on the battlefield, and then it went crew, and I was like, that's got zero power. And then I read Giant Ox and I was like, oh, it has text. I thought it was a 0/6, and I was like, oh cool, a wall. And then I read it and I was like, geez, that's insane. Can't beat that. The deck looks really cool. It obviously has its pitfalls. It four-rolled a prelim as well, so you know it's been putting up some results.
Mm-hmm.
Interested.
I was gonna say it's kind of refreshing to see like a non-black aggro or non-red. Sorry, I mean I guess it is kind of red aggro, but like non-mono red, non-burn type aggro deck.
Yeah, I agree. I quite like it. It's like the first aggro deck I've seen since like non like burn mono black since maybe what's that card again? In Soul Artifact?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
The blue red deck. Or I've seen my friend Oscar Christensen playing like Jeskai version a while ago. It's definitely interesting.
I mean that's probably like the next evolution is to take this into Jeskai so you get in Soul, or maybe take it into black so you
either get... that or I keep thinking if we go black then we can have Kruxa just play him as a 6/6 crew before he goes to the graveyard,
and you also get what's the other card, the Unlicensed Disintegration.
It's tough because you want the Mutavaults for Magda, but your mana in 3 color wouldn't really support them. I'm going to go ahead and jump in with another deck, if that's all right. I'm going to start it off with another trend alert. You know, Harry already went with the first one in that you're playing a blue-black deck that releases to the wind Valky. I am also doing Valky's seeing a lot of play, especially with reasons to cheat him in early. Rather than release to the winds, I wanted to point out the Niv to Light, really Bring to Light lists that are now not always playing Niv. So we're seeing some Bring to Light lists that are, you know, 2 to 4 colors. I was actually even looking at it was basically the Mono Green Planeswalkers list, but it had Valky and Bring to Light and ways to cheat that in. But, you know, we're seeing what looks like the classic Niv shell, but just kind of cutting red often in order to make just kind of a control shell that can still Bring to Light for Valky, with the assumption that, you know, Valky a lot of the time is +2. Using any of his abilities is 2 card advantage. That's often as good as what you're going to get from Niv, especially if you activate him 2-3 times from one activation. So he's usually as good of a hit. And then you just get to play kind of a control list. You're not warping your mana quite as much. And those have been really interesting to me. So, you know, I linked one if we wanted to look at it. I think I linked a black-red list that was, you know, just running Bring to Light and had Velky. But yeah, there was a mono-green I've seen. I've seen four-color. But various ways to cheat Velky into play are seeing a lot of play, especially when they can be played in a kind of fair control shell.
Yeah, I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of these decks. Like, there's, I think people finally realize, like you said, that maybe Valky is just straight up better than Niv-Mizzet Reborn, Niv-Mizzet Reborn to mm-hmm. bring to Light 4. I'm inclined to agree with that. Like, I think a lot of the time when Tybalt comes down, if you don't have an answer for it immediately, you're already down two cards. But like, if they untap with Tybalt, it's just, if you don't have board pressure, it's just an absolute nightmare. And yeah, getting to cast Tybalt for 5 mana is still really good, because the 7 mana Planeswalker is actually good, do you know? You can all,
and especially when it's either Tybalt or you're grabbing a sweeper, so yeah. that still got flexibility.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not surprised now that the Bring to Light decks are still going strong. Ever since Tybalt was printed, I think it was just good enough a card that they could lose Uro and Teferi and still be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and like you said, it's getting to the point where people realize how good it is that they're willing to just play Tybalt in non-Tybalt locations, like
mm-hmm.
blue green splashing for Tybalt because of Bring to Light is just so funny to me. But I think the good thing about having more Tybalt, less Niv-Mizzet Reborn, is you're less strictly relying on multicolor spells. So like a lot of the Niv to Light lists are actually only playing one Niv-Mizzet Reborn main, and they're playing a bunch of monocolored cards. Like, they're playing like Fatal Push Thoughtseize main, they're playing like Extinction Event, Omen of the Sea, Trial Ambition, because most of the builds seem to be Yorion
mm-hmm.
Slanted right now. And then,
yeah, that's the thing, is that there are real costs to putting Niv-Mizzet in your deck.
Exactly.
You don't have those with Tybalt.
Exactly. And so the multicolored cards that they tend to use are like Binding of the Old Gods, Oath of Kaya, like cards that are pretty much good at any given rate, regardless of, like, they're not like going out their way to put multicolored spells in the deck. Cards that synergize both with Niv-Mizzet Reborn and Yorion. And then the kind of standard usual suspects like Growth Spiral, Abrupt Decay, Thought Erasure, obviously Bring to Light, and a new one, Sarulf Realm Eater, which is quite interesting.
Mm. Oh, I've been pushing that card and I'm so glad it's seeing play.
Card's very good. Card's very good. And, yeah, you know, multicolor, so play it.
And once you've got Tulsimir in play, he's just so good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think I seen a picture of someone cast Wolf Willow Haven with Tulsimir in play, and they forgot that triggers Tulsimir. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah. I haven't been able to find a way to get Arlen Cord in the same deck as a Tulsimir, but one day.
I know
I've seen Claudio play Arlen Cord in a version of Niv, so one day I'll find a way to work all those together.
Huh. I know, I forgot about Arlen Cord, to be honest. I forgot that card existed.
Yeah. Kind of janky. Maybe we'll get good werewolves in a few sets in Innistrad.
Yeah.
Anyways, if it's not, you know, I did go last, but I do kind of have the other direction that kind of the Niv Delight players, you know, I just brought in Claudio. And rather than cutting the Niv part of the deck, they kind of cut the Bring Delight part of the deck. And are instead going with these 4 or 5 color enigmatic inclination. What is it called? Enigmatic
incarnation.
Incarnation. Yeah. So let me quick read this card. If no one has seen this, you might see this deck if you play a league. Beginning of your end step, it's a 4-man enchantment. Beginning of your end step, you can sacrifice another enchantment. If you do, you search your library for a creature card with 1 mana higher than the sacrifice enchantment's converted mana cost, and you put it right onto the battlefield. So you sacrifice a 2, you get a 3. You sacrifice a 4, you get a 5, etc. And you get it the first turn it comes into play, so you don't even have to like wait till the next upkeep or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So You know, Claudio used to be our Niv-to-Light guy. We would always bring him up when we were talking about Niv-to-Light. I feel like instead of being the king of Bring to Light, now he has to be the king of Toolbox because he's been playing this deck instead. And, you know, he's got a bunch of 2 enchantments, a bunch of 4 enchantments, and can just grab all kinds of good 3 and 5 mana cards in 5 colors, sometimes including Niv-Mizzet. I think his most recent lists have finally cut it, but it was in the deck at one point.
I mean, the thing that I'm, like, most surprised about in this deck is, like, the path of to the World Tree.
Oh, that card's so good. You know, Limited All-Star, if you've played Limited, that deck kills. But, you know, it is real to a, you know, 5-mana deck, especially a 5-mana deck running Fires to Invention, can very much use that activation.
Yeah, like, when I first played the deck, I was like, Path to World Tree in this format? Like, what's going on? And then it quickly dawned on me what they were trying to do. I was like, oh, you're playing like a Birthing Pods, like, enchantment deck. Mm-hmm. Nice. As I, and you know that way, you're like, what creatures could they have? I have no idea what they could be playing right now. No idea. And yeah, like looking at Claudio's list, it's a really sweet one. Like, I like to innovate. You know, I like to kind of like go my own way sometimes. No stranger to that, but these, mm-hmm. like whoever came up with these decks, Galaxy Brain. Yeah. Like I could never come up with a deck like this. Like, no way. It's insane. Like, and the deck looks pretty powerful. So many enchantments that are reasonable at their, you know, initial ETB effects at their own rate, and then they play Enigmatic Incarnation that just trades them once they become redundant into a creature. It's really good.
I was going to say, it looks like a Yorion player and a Niv player got really drunk and had a kid.
Yeah, exactly. It's insane. And you know what? Like, every time I play, I'm the opposite, Claudia. I'll never play these 5-color monstrosity decks, right? And it's so annoying, but like, maybe I've tried it once or twice, but every time I play against them, it's always like they have perfect mana. And then when I play it, I just look at like this unplayable hand. It's like when you play Limited and you're like, you're forced to go into 3 colors because your draft's train wrecked in a monocolored format, and you just smash in like 6 of each lands, and then you're just like mulliganing into oblivion every time.
Yeah, I've seen it played, and yeah, it definitely takes a certain type of player to understand how it works. Like you said, it's a Galaxy Brain deck, and it needs a Galaxy Brain to pilot it.
Yeah,
so indeed. This is something like the pro players, you know, like especially like the Japanese pro players that are like super good control players and can see like 10 plays down the road. This is that type of deck that would really, how can I say, reward those types of players.
Definitely. I definitely agree. And I'm, despite being a control player, I'm not one of those control players.
Yeah.
I think, this deck would just be too much for me. but it's definitely sweet. And it's definitely powerful. It'd be interesting to see how it develops. I would like to see it like Frieza level 6 or something. or whatever Frieza's ultimate form is. I can't remember.
Maybe it's the robot one after he gets killed. I don't know. Yeah, it's been too long.
He came back, yeah, a few times.
I think there's like a gold one of him too. But anyways, this is a Magic podcast. So my turn. All right. Next.
So, yeah, why don't we pass it back to you?
So, I've been... You know, you know that I love playing aggro decks. And one kind of cool aggro deck that I've seen show up and more people talk about is the Black-White Humans deck. You know, we've been talking forever about how there's never really been a good white deck, a white aggressive deck out there, and that we thought that there should be one. And I think this one went like 5-1. It's won some Pioneer Challenges. So again, this is a companion Lurrus deck, but it plays Bloodsoaked Champion. This one has Codespell Cleric, Dauntless Bodyguard, Giant's Killer, Thraven Inspector, Kitesail Freebooter, Luminarch Aspirant, and Thalia's Lieutenant. So it's like super low to the ground. It's 32 creatures. It has Fatal Push, and instead of using something like Collected Company to kind of put more stuff into play, it's playing Rally the Ranks to just kind of like boost the power level up to a point where, you know, whatever cards you have on the battlefield just overwhelm your opponents. Like, it's if they don't have any kind of sweeper on turn three or four, like, this can just, like, end the game, basically.
Wow.
So, wow. What do you guys think of this as a rogue deck?
Well, my dog thinks it's interesting. I mean, yeah, I like humans. I think that if we can come back to something fair-ish like humans and just beat people down with big creatures, I love it.
Yeah, I agree. I would like to see... that's one thing I think Pioneer is kind of missing is, like, tribal decks. So, like, seeing all these, like, rogue dwarf decks, I like a lot.
I mean, like, aside from Thoughtseize, it's, like, a super budget deck. So, you know, I liked when SRAM's Auras, you know, was a thing, or sorry, when it first came out, and, you know, any of those other, like, sub-$50 decks. So if you get rid of Thoughtseizes, this is, like, maybe, like, less than $100 to build.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really awesome. Nice. Really nice.
You want to go next with something, Harry?
Yeah, my last deck for the rogues decks is
oh no.
But basically it's not anything unbelievable. We're still cheating Valkyrie into play, right? It's on the deck list channel. It's basically it was coined by one of the modern masters, Doomswitch, and it's 4-color Lurrus, right? So imagine a Lurrus deck that also plays Bring to Light. So this deck basically plays 4 copies of Jacerin's Prodigy, 2 Kroxa, 3 Valky. And it basically is almost like a Jund deck, but it's splashing blue for... it's a 4-color deck. Like it's playing Drown the Locks, it's playing Bring to Light... it's playing a lot of good cards. So basically it's just like using really efficient, effective creatures. Like the great thing about Valky is it gives Lurrus decks another angle than just aggro, which I really like, because I felt like I like and I hate it at the same time, because previously if someone revealed a Lurrus, you're like, in Pioneer, you're like, it's going to be Burn or it's going to be Pyromancer, right? There was only like 2 or 3 decks it could be, right? Or Auras. But now, you've got a deck that disguises itself under the guise of Lurrus, so people are like, oh, it's going to be a very aggressive deck. However, it's playing, you know, all these kind of like Jacerin's Prodigy, Valky, Bring to Light, it's playing removal spells, like it's playing Extinction Event, Colligan's Command, it's like this really grindy deck, and Drown the Lock, which can sometimes be a counterspell. So, I really like this innovation from Doomswitch. It's really, really interesting, and it's just another one of these decks where, you know, it's under the radar at the moment, but it might blow up. It might actually be really good. I know 2 people got 5-0s with that within the past week or so. So yeah, and you know, this is the kind of deck that I could get behind and, you know, start trying it out, grinding with it, and see how it goes. It plays the more...
Yeah, you know, I almost want to say, you know, this is kind of just what I was talking about. This one's, you know, playing red instead of white. I think I was looking at a list that was 4-color with white, and you know, this one has Lurrus, so a little difference there. But again, yeah, it's a Valky deck that's playing Bring to Light as a, you know, controlling fair deck that gets to just play this, you know, 5-mana thing that finds either a sweeper or it finds Valky as a planeswalker, which is just huge and awesome.
It's too galaxy brain for me again. too many choices. I mean, that's one thing that I wanted to bring up real quick. Do you feel like we're back to a format now where decision making and skill is more important than luck as far as whoever lands their Teferi first?
I think removing Uro naturally makes the format more decision intensive, because and Teferi as well, because like Teferi and Uro, well, not so much Teferi, but mainly Uro, like Uro didn't really give you many decisions, because bringing back Uro from the graveyard, regardless of where you are,
in the gameplay
is all, yeah, it's just always the best choice. And
it's also inevitable. I think we lose that inevitability a lot of the blue-green decks.
Exactly. And Uro was one of these cards that as soon as I seen it printed, it was one of those, this is so obviously just stupidly too powerful. Like, we all knew that fetch lands make the escape cost almost irrelevant. And it was like, you gain 3 life, you ramp, you draw a card, and then you can buy it back to do the exact same thing again, have a 6/6 on the battlefield, and then trigger it again when it attacks. Like, I don't understand why did the card need to trigger again when you attack, you know? Like, I think like, it coming into the battlefield, doing it, and then doing the effect again with a 6/6 was, like, more than good enough to see play. But then they added the stipulation that if you attack, it also triggers again. It was just crazy card. Anyway,
if there's a card that's past mythic rare, it's that card.
Yeah,
they need a new rarity for Uro.
Yeah, banless rarity.
Yeah,
collector's item rarity. Cannibal. It's like basically like, I don't know if you ever played Yu-Gi-Oh with Egyptian god cards. That's what Uro felt like. Uro felt like an Egyptian god card. But yeah, so now that those cards are gone, yeah, I definitely think the format feels a lot more intricate, where like every decision matters, like kind of like how it was with all the combo decks, in terms of like people, you know, Inverter didn't lead for fun games, but like the deck was really hard to play, regardless of the combo. But it was like you had to work out like what disruption your opponents could have and when was a good time to like pull the trigger. And, you know, I feel like it's quite similar because you've got, like, Rakdos Pyromancer. Like, that deck's not easy to play. There's a lot of skill and decision-making involved in playing that deck. Bring to Light requires a lot of decision-making, like, mainly in your mulligan decisions or, like, stuff like that. And, I mean, look at Jund Citadel. Like, that deck is super intricate. You know, it's, like, 4-color rally when it's in standard, like, it was probably the best deck, but just really hard to play optimally. Like, yeah, there's so many decks that are good right now. That
there's definitely options for that kind of player who likes to really suss things out.
Exactly. And another thing that I personally like, people will disagree, is that burn isn't as strong as it was. So, like, the last format, it was just like, you're either playing a blue-green X deck or you're playing a burn deck. So there wasn't really much decisions in a lot of the games. Like, the games were quite scripted, like I said before. So yeah, I definitely think the format's in a better place. Definitely.
Yeah, that's my favorite takeaway. You know, we were saying when these bans happen, we're like, okay, well, we have to see, is burn just going to completely take over the format, or does this mean that with Uro gone, other mid-range decks can show up? And I think that's what we're starting to see, is we're seeing some of these interesting mid-range decks. You know, I don't know if we've got any Rhino decks for you today, but we certainly have some interesting things. Can I cut in with another list? Because I've definitely got another place we wanted to go.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that there's a few decks that fall into this category, but Blue Red is a deck that is back, and you know, that was not really seeing any play. Like, there wasn't really any blue red color combination decks, unless you're talking about maybe Teemer. But mostly on the back of Goldspan Dragon, we are seeing a number of different blue red decks. So we are seeing Phoenix a little bit return. That is nice to see. I don't think that's been doing great. I don't think that it's the place I would suggest going. But Blue-Red Dragons is a very real deck, and I've been seeing a handful of different builds on it on leagues. So, you know, Goldspan Dragon's the big one. We do get the Fairy Dragon as a 1-1 that grows very quickly, and those both power up Silumgar's Scorn, which is then becomes, you know, Blue-Blue Counterspell, which is just a very cool card. They get to play some other good things. You know, they usually play Bonecrusher Giant. They sometimes play the Shark Typhoon. We sometimes see Brazen Borrower. It's kind of just a, you know, good stuff in blue and red, but these decks have been showing up quite a bit, and you know, even things like Burn, once there's a 4/4 flyer in the air, it's hard to race against that.
There's two ways to build this, I think. Like you said, there's the more controlling one that you talked about, and then there's like a more aggressive one. Like you said,
I think it's more than just two. You know, there are more aggressives. I don't know if Fairy Dragon always belongs in the same deck as, you know, I've seen the blue, blue, red, red, red Niv-Mizzet showing up in some of these. I've seen, you know, Shark Typhoon, I don't think quite belongs with Sprite Dragon 2, but I have seen those together.
It's very unrefined right now, but definitely an up and coming archetype. So, what were you going to say, Martin?
Oh, I love this. I'm all over this. This deck looks amazing. Like, I've seen it, went 5-1 in a challenge. They were playing by Brunister. They were playing 4 copies of Sprite Dragon, 3 copies of Shark Typhoon. I posted on Twitter that I said, Ghostband Dragon is the new Teferi of Hero Dominaria. Don't at me. Because in Standard, I was playing Blue-Red in Standard. Oh my goodness. This card, like, people were saying that this card was worse than Glorybringer. Like, why would you play this? Like, you've got Glorybringer. I think, like, the same thing happened with Teferi. It's like, I don't think people realize how good playing a 5-drop and then having access to 2 mana really is. Like, the card doesn't just come down. And it triggers when you target it. So you get your, you always get your token first, and you have access to 2 mana. So cards like, the card pairs up so beautifully with Silengar Scorn. Like, oh my goodness, like, bringing it down and having Silengar Scorn in your hand. If your opponent, like, we're assuming we're not playing against a blue deck and it gets counterspelled, right? It gets countered, right? But if it resolves and you have counterspell in your hand, you just feel unbeatable. It's the same in, like, with Standard, like, you'd play, like, I don't know, like, Essence Scatters or, like, Negates, Saw It Coming, stuff like that. And if you had access to, like, any of those, like, Negate or Saw It Coming in Fortell, like, you just felt like you were going to run away with the game. And it gives you access to really powerful cards like Draconic Roar. Draconic Roar is just so good when you're playing against those, like, burn decks, those aggressive decks, because the free damage to the face just completely swings the tempo in the matchup. And Bone Crusher Giant naturally just, pardon the pun, but stomps on aggro decks. So, this is... You get to play Dig Through Time. Like, you're still playing, like, a lot of efficient spells. Like, would I play Wild Slash? I don't know. I think I would... Given the tempo and there's access to other burn spells, maybe. I've seen some people play Fiery Impulse, which was kind of interesting. Probably not quite as good. But yeah, it's got a really sweet tempo aspect to the deck, and it's something we've not really seen in Pioneer for a while. Like, we haven't seen a lot of tempo decks, have we?
Yeah, no, not really.
No. I haven't seen any kind of aggro decks with, like, counter spells. Like, maybe some of us were hoping, like, Blue-Red Wizards would be a thing. Never really ended up being something to take note of, but
Maybe it's something to explore. And I do want to call out one more blue-red before we move off of blue-red, is that I have also seen a little bit of blue-red emerge. Often that's still Goldspan Dragon, but it's all Rekindling Phoenix, the 4-drop.
Yeah.
And then, what is the 8-mana?
Elder
Deep Fiend.
That's the one. So that's really a Elder Deep Fiend deck. Is kind of the same kind of direction, though, blue-red tempo.
I love seeing that card getting play.
I remember...
Yeah, sorry.
No, I remember playing that card, Elder Deep Fiend, at GP Madrid, and it was blue-white flash, and then the tech was to bring it in because it was quite good against, like, the mirror, because they couldn't interact with it, or against, like, green-black delirium as well, because it was just a big creature, and you could, like, use some of your 3-mana spells that it kind of gained their use, like Reflector Mage, etc. I think there was other ones like Spell Queller and some other ones I can't remember, but yeah, Elder Deep Fiend definitely has a place in my heart. And being able to bring back Kozilek's Return with it makes, you know, Kozilek's Return at the face value is already, like, decent in the format, but the fact that you can basically wipe the board, especially when you've got decks like maybe like Jund, Citadel, Roman around, like having access to Kozilek's Return in your graveyard is really nice.
Yeah, you know, since you did mention it, I don't think we need to go too deep on it, but I have seen Dimir Rogues showing up just a little bit. You know, we were saying that a big thing holding that back is you don't want to mill your opponent's Uro, but we have been seeing a little bit of blue-black Rogues, you know, often as a Lurrus deck, looking a lot like the Standard, and the one thing there that I really like is that they've been playing Elf. They've been playing Bloodbraid Elf, what am I thinking of? I know how to say words. Mm-hmm. The green black elf that costs 1 mana that's banned everywhere.
Deathrite Shaman.
There we go. Yes. I got caught up with the elf part of it. Deathrite Shaman, I think, is a huge addition to that deck. You know, it can help with graveyard hate. You know, there are decks that are still using the graveyard plenty, but the fact that it's just, you know, it's always on in a deck that's running things like Hedron Crab or, you know, all of those milling Rogues, so you actually get to play it as a dork, you get to play it as something that can just deal two, it gains life. It has play in every kind of matchup.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it would be bad if we didn't talk about a rogue deck on a rogue podcast.
Yeah, exactly. As long as we're talking to the rogues deck.
There's one more deck that I wanted to talk about, and then we can end it if you want.
I've got one more that I think definitely needs a call out, unless if it's the same one you did. So go ahead.
Is it the Sultai Ultimatum deck?
Oh yes, definitely it is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That deck.
So really I've nice. Seen this. Basically the thing that I'm comparing this to is like a Gifts Ungiven deck from Modern, where you know you get to search your library for cards, and your opponent chooses which one you play, and you just make it so it's like it's an impossible choice. So Emergent Ultimatum, for everybody that doesn't know, it's search your library for up to 3 monocolored cards with different names and exile them. Your opponent chooses one of those cards. You shuffle the rest into your library, and you can cast the other card without paying its mana cost, and then you exile it. So how did...
Yeah, and I wanted to say, you know, I think if you're comparing it to Gifts Ungiven, I think that it's more like Legacy Gifts Ungiven, where you're finding gifts and, like, you know, a Praetor or something, and putting them both in your graveyard and just immediately bringing it back.
Yeah, this is like a more fair Gifts Ungiven, I would say.
No, I'm saying this is more unfair. You know, if you're thinking about Gifts Ungiven in something like Modern, it's seen play as just, hey, I get 2 great cards no matter what. This is more like this ends the game on the spot regardless of what you pick.
Really? This one?
Yeah. I mean, did you see the list I picked? Here, why don't I sell this up a little bit? Also give a little bit of background is that, you know, the thing that I really also like and I want to call out is that this is a deck that was mostly driven by a group of really young players. You know, there's kind of a group for under 18 Moto Grinders. And they were the ones pushing this. I think a handful of them brought it to the champion qualifier on last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I want to say the best finish was like top 64. But regardless, you know, did play reasonably well. So Emergent Ultimatum. So the 3 that you're going to find here for the best results, it's always going to be Enter the Infinite and Omniscience. And then your opponent cannot give you both of those cards. So what you do is you grab one more card that will probably win you the game. So what this one likes to do is if you've got something like a Way to Tutor in your hand, or if you've got another Ultimatum in your hand, then you'll do Enter the Infinite, Omniscience, and another take an extra turn card. So like Elrond's Epiphany. They can't give you Omniscience, Enter the Infinite, so... They say, okay, well, if I give them Enter the Infinite and they get an extra turn, then they draw their whole library, get an extra turn, they win on the spot. Don't do that. So you end up with Omniscience and an extra turn. You get to play anything in your hand. If you've got a Tutor, you just grab Enter, you win from there. Alternately, I also really like the Great Aurora is a card that never really saw play. 9 mana green sorcery.
Yeah.
But if you play that with Omni and Enter, you know, you basically, they can either give you your entire library or they can give you Omniscience and Great Aurora. So you'll draw like 12, 13 cards. And if any of those does anything, you can cast them for free with Omniscience. So like I said, generally, it's very rare that it misses. You know, it does lose to counter spells, but if you cast Emergent Ultimatum, generally you win the game on the spot. So the rest of the deck is about keeping you safe by killing things and ramping you to that 7 mana.
It's a really interesting strategy. My teammate, Traft MTG, he came up with a step-by-step guide, a basic guide to like his take on the deck. So basically, like he explains, like you said, the goal is to set up emergent piles in a way that guarantees you either an instant win or an extra turn with Omniscience. So his setup was 1 Omniscience, 1 Mastermind's Acquisition, 1 Final Parting, 1 Profound Journey, which to those that don't know, Profound Journey is a card from Cannes, Dragons, where it's a 7 mana.
It's Dragons, that's the one that had Rebound.
Yeah, return target permanent from your graveyard to the battlefield, Rebound. So you basically have that Behold the Beyond, Part the Water Veil, Alrun's Epiphany, and the World Tree. So like he basically said that each time we assume we have access to 7 mana with at least 5 lands in play, then we then cast and resolve Emergent Ultimatum. It's assumed that Omniscience plus any other tutor effect wins you the game. This can certainly be done via Seasons Pass plus Balaghed Recovery Loops. Finding the most efficient way is a future exercise, so he says. He also assumes that taking an extra turn with Omniscience play is sufficient to win the game.
And that I've argued with him. You know, I was on this Twitter thread. That I don't think is 100%, but it's still usually good enough.
Yeah, so exactly. For example, like if you have 2 piles that are Omniscience, so pile 1, say you have Omniscience, Alrun's Epiphany, and Final Parting. 2 of the piles are either Omni plus a tutor or Omniscience plus a Time Walk. So your opponent is forced to give you the Epiphany plus Parting. Then you resolve Final Parting, sending an Omniscience to the graveyard and adding an Emergent Ultimatum to hand. On the extra turn, you cast the second Ultimatum to get pile 2. profound journey, behold the beyond, and part the water veil. Profound plus behold is omni plus tutor. Profound plus part is omniscience plus time walk. So the last pile ends up being behold the beyond and part the water veil. Behold search for profound journey, the world tree and mastermind's acquisition. On the extra turn, play the world tree, cast profound journey, bringing back omniscience, and this is the omniscience plus tutor. This is way too galaxy brain for me. Yeah. I don't have.
All right, yeah. If that guy's, if one of you guys' head, we're gonna have an emergent ultimatum for dummies guide out for $15.99 in the fall. Yeah. Pick it up.
Then. Yeah,
you'll be able to exactly. To follow
oh jeez, that just my brain was fried just from trying to work that out. It's basically. Basically, this deck is go into your junk rare pile, find the cards with the biggest converted mana cost that are like spells, and then just shove them into the deck that are Pioneer legal, of course.
Yeah.
You can't go too wrong with that. But
yeah, I like it when you grab a 9-drop, a 12-drop, and a 10-drop, and ask them to give you two of them.
Oh, I really picked up this Omniscience from Draft? Oh, sweet. Okay. Here we go. But that deck looks really cool.
So,
those are for me. I think I can wrap it up there as far as decks.
I was going to say, what's your choice? What's your pick for, like, you know, the best rogue deck from this season?
I'm not biased, but I'm going with Valkyrie combo.
Yeah.
Probably, I think, like, if we're doing it in a way that it's, like, one of those decks that was just, like, from playing against, and I was like, what the hell is this? To, oh wow, this is a real deck. Probably what's the enchantment called again? Incarnation?
Enigmatic
Incarnation. Enigmatic Incarnation. What a tongue twister that is. That deck.
Yeah.
That deck was just like, who came up with that? Like, what is this? And why is it so good? Yeah. that deck is definitely like my pick, I would say.
And what I love is that every time I watch the deck, there's always some new card. They're like, oh man, where did they grab that random card
exactly.
from?
Exactly.
And it ends up being great.
It's like,
but then whenever I suggest one to, like, I'll go out on Claudio's stream and be like, hey, have you tried this card? He'll be like, why are you telling me these terrible cards?
Oh, I know. You feel like sometimes I do that as well. I put the cards in my deck. I'm like, oh wow, no one will see this card coming. And it's like, yeah, they didn't see it coming because it wasn't worth seeing in the first place. Why is it there?
Yeah, that's why everyone's like, why are you playing Zerda in this deck?
Yeah, I'm going to agree, too. I'm going to say that the Enigma is probably going to be the deck that comes out on top. The other ones, you know, like the Sacrifice and whatever else we were talking about today, they were kind of already becoming good because of, like, the better mana base and stuff like that. But this feels like more of, like, I would say it's not really a Niv deck. It's just a
toolbox deck. It's the new toolbox.
It's a new toolbox.
I think my pick was going to be blue red. I do that think that too. Dragons, you know, Goldspan Dragon's the real deal.
Yeah. That's
going to
be my second pick.
Goldspan Dragon is, like, I love it. I love it when I get cards, like, so wrong. I think it's one of the coolest things ever when you're, like, in a good way, not like Oko wrong. Like, not like that, right? But what I mean is, like, cards that you kind of look at and you're like, in a vacuum, is this card going to be good, or is this just going to be it'll show up in a red deck as top end as is standard for any 5-mana 4/4 dragon?
Yeah.
But, like, you're just kind of there, like, I don't know. But then it was, like, Teferi, Hero of Dominaria as well, when I was just like, whoa, this is quite a good planeswalker. Don't really see how this card is in special. It sees modern play. The card's great. And Goldspan Dragon, for me, maybe not quite the same, but, like, not far off, like, I was casting standard, and I was like, wow, this is so good, in a good way. Like, not ban-worthy good, but, like, good as in, like, really impressive. And one of the things I like the most, like, I agree with you as well, Kevin, but, like, one of the things I like the most about the enchantment deck is nothing says welcome to Pioneer like some stupid, dumb enchantment deck that's actually really, like, good and playable. Like, that's what I love about this format is it still has so many unique elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, you're not going to see that really in any other format, like, this enchantment deck. And, you know, that's Pioneer.
We got piles and piles and piles.
Exactly.
It's the pile awesome. Format.
Yeah, you know, the only other card that I think maybe was something we undersold. Like, we were kind of cool on it, but we kind of undersold it during our spoiler was Essika's Chariot, seeing play in a few decks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that card as well.
I just want to call that one out as, yeah, it's amazing in Winota. We're seeing it in some of the Fires lists. It's showing up here and there.
Yeah, it just makes, like, removal really difficult. Like, once it resolves, it's just really hard to deal with it. It's just so... It's like, do I deal with the tokens? Do I deal with the chariot itself? Like, when do I deal with it?
If you got a Bone Crusher, you can block it. But, like, then they've got three bears in play, and what are you doing? So I'm just going to call that as a trend alert.
He doesn't like cats.
All right, well, we're wrapping up to about an hour here. So why don't we go ahead and end the show with that? Let's just give some quick shout-outs and... Twitter and things. So guys, if you aren't already, one of the best places to hear about anything going on in the world of Pioneer is by following us at Twitter at MTGPioneer, as well as using hashtag MTGPioneer to find anything that's Pioneer related.
Okay, my turn?
Yeah.
Oh, please. Sorry. Yeah, so of course, you know, we talked about a lot of rogue decks today, and if we missed any, we would love for you to come into our Discord, jump into the decklist channel, drop some sweet rogue lists that you found or that you've played over the last, you know, few weeks or so in this new format. And again, you can find that information. It should be on our Twitter at MTGPioneer. It should be in our profile. But you can also find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, which is Yoschwenky. And Martin, how about you? Any upcoming stuff you want to promote?
Yeah, same as always. You know, if you're interested, if you enjoyed the stream, the podcast today, then you can, if you want to see more content, post Pioneer content as well as other formats, you can get me on Twitter at Harry13SCO, short for Scotland, so Sierra Charlie Oscar. And if you like watching Pioneer, I also stream 3 days a week, so you can catch me on twitch.tv/Harry13SCO.
Yep, you're on the long list of people that I always want to watch, and you're usually never streaming in my time zone. But also, if you guys do enjoy watching Twitch, we have been shouting out a lot of Twitch streamers as they stream Pioneer. Or if you're a Twitch streamer and you're thinking about streaming some Pioneer, go ahead and just give me a shout out on Twitter, and I'd be happy to retweet your stream. We love to promote anyone who's sharing or making Pioneer content.
Yeah, just tag us at MTGPioneer.
Yep. Thank you so much for joining us on the show once again. We always do appreciate this, and I think that this was fun. You know, we did bring you in as a grinder, but this was kind of a fun episode, and that we're getting to look at some of the, you know, weird and interesting things that might show up when you're playing a league. If you guys enjoyed this and other content, like I said, make sure to follow, and we are the First Pioneers Podcast. We look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online.